Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains a recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So welcome Elaine S., a compulsive overeater from Tennessee.
Thanks so much, Catherine. And thank you to Jessica for inviting me to share. My name is Elaine. I am in Nashville, Tennessee, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. So tonight I'm going to share an overview of my story and specifically focus on my recovery from relapse and how I use the Big Book also. So let me give you some stats. We all always want to hear the stats, right? And those are, if you're a numbers person, here you go. So my top weight is 220 pounds. My current weight is 141 and the scale is still going down. And my abstinence date is 6/8 of 23 at 1:30 p.m. in the afternoon. Now, how many people do you know? I see that laughter. I see that. No, have a time with their abstinence date. Well, there's a story there. The story is that I had eaten my planned committed lunch and then I binged afterwards. And I said, I'm going to start again. And I got out my trusty notebook and wrote 1:30 p.m. down. And at that time, I didn't know that that was going to be the beginning of this wonderful journey of life being better than I ever could have thought it would be. I know that sounds really cheesy, but it's also honest. The pain of the food was what propelled me to recovery. The hating myself for the way I ate yesterday and actually that day, right? Because I had binged after lunch. And why can't you stop? And what's wrong with you? And all those things that were going through my mind. And the pain of the food is what made me willing to take action. So, here's my story. I have been in the rooms since August, the end of August of 1977. It's a long time. I was 20 years old and my story, as you can tell from my date, is not that I was clean that whole time. You know, I am not the person with 45 years of recovery. My story is I kept coming back. I kept bringing my body. There were periods of abstinence, but nothing like what I've experienced in the last 2 years. Nothing of that peace, harmony, joy, and complete neutrality. But I kept coming back and I'm so glad I did. What if I would have given up? You know, there is no doubt in my mind that I could weigh 400 pounds. There just is no doubt. But honestly, the past doesn't matter. What matters is focusing on now. Focusing on now. That's how things changed. So I'm going to share in my experiences. Obviously, I'm not going to share everything, but I asked for guidance and I'm going to share the guidance that I got. So I've got my two worst experiences with food, and hopefully you can relate. The goal of this is so that you can relate and see, gosh, if Elaine got better, I can get better too. So my husband has been supportive since that first OA meeting, since that very first OA meeting. In fact, my kids were 17 months apart. David was still like 10 months old. And the neighbor says, hey, there's a meeting tonight at 7:30. This was like 5 o'clock. It had been one of those days when I hadn't got a chance to get in the shower yet. And I hadn't started dinner. And Ed said, I'll get dinner. You go get in the shower. And I was at that meeting that night at 7:30. So this man has been through it all with me. And so one of my worst experiences with food was in the time right before the end, over 2 years ago. He had left to go to errands, and I decided I was going to binge. And I'd lined up all the stuff out on the counter, and I was sitting there chowing down. And he forgot something and came home. And he walked in, and the look on his face was, "Honey, what are you doing to yourself?" And I said, in a very flippant way, "I told you I've been having trouble with my program." Like it's his fault. The other worst experience with food is, of course, I wouldn't eat in front of other people. I wouldn't eat in front of family members, So after a family event, everybody was in bed, and I was going through the trash can eating all the food on the paper plates that was in the trash can behind other people. And I don't say this, for sensationalism. I share that because I know this disease will kill me. And that is how bad it was for me. That is how bad it was for me. So what happened? Why do you not do those things today? Well, I heard the truth. I started attending a large big book study meeting in 2020, and I heard the truth. I heard the truth that it was possible to recover, that people didn't keep slipping in, sliding in, sliding in, slipping all the time. That, I started to hear the truth. Well, it has taken me three times through the steps since then with a recovered big book sponsor to have what I have today. So when I say, I'm a relapse survivor, I'm a relapse survivor. It took me three times. I didn't just get it, boop, 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 boop. And I don't think I got it. Each day I take the actions. I heard hope. I heard recovery. And I learned all meetings are not created equal. Healthy meetings are really important. But, everybody always asks me, what kept you in relapse? Why are you still in relapse? Several factors, but I'll be happy to share some of them with you. One, I wasn't completely honest about the food. The disease is progressive, and there was more food I needed to let go of. And I was still eating those foods, and I did not want to let go of them. I was thinking I shouldn't have to do any more than what I did back in 1977. I completely dismissed the progressiveness of the disease. Here's recovery, here's the disease. Parallel paths, right? If one slows down, the other one's going to catch up. So, I can't dismiss the progressiveness of the disease. I was playing God. I would do prayer and meditation, and then not as robust as what I do today. And then I would leave God in the bedroom chair, in the chair in the bedroom, and go about the day and do whatever Elaine wanted to do. And that didn't work either. I did not take seriously that the disease would kill me. I was being dismissive. Oh, I don't have to do all that. Queen of loopholes. What could I get away with, but still be, within the box, right? I tried working the steps several different ways. So I'll save you some trouble. I tried eating my way through the steps, thinking, well, when I got to the end, I wouldn't want to eat anymore. Guess what I learned? You got to put the food down and then work the steps. So those are some of the things, some of the contributing factors. So what made a difference? I heard the truth, and then I had to face the truth. What really was truth? Not what I wanted it to be. I wanted to not have this disease. But what's truth? The truth is, once I start eating certain foods or engaging in certain behaviors, I can't stop. That's the truth. No more denial, no more excuses. I had to call out the lies that my mind was telling me. It's not that bad. When you want to stop, you can. Those were keeping me in the disease. My mind says eat. That goes against the instinct of self-preservation. Everything that's alive is given this gift of self-preservation to keep ourselves alive. But my mind tells me no. I have a disease that is progressive, it's permanent, can't get rid of it, and it's fatal. I had to face the truth about the food. There was more to let go of, more things to be honest. Now, you can't tell because this is Zoom, but I'm 5'2". I've always wanted to be 5'10". Well, what if I bought pants for a 5'10 person and attempted to walk around in them? I'd trip and break my neck, right? I have to accept I'm 5'2". I can buy clothes that fit, that work. I have to accept I have this disease, just like I have to accept I'm 5'2". I don't have green eyes. I might be able to wear green eyeshadow, but I've got brown eyes. I have to accept what is. And that was the beginning. Hearing the truth, facing the truth, and then starting to take action. I've learned the hard way that I cannot get the effect of the steps if I'm still eating. I tried that many, 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 many times. So when I say, learn from me, save yourself some pain, the doctor's opinion, which is in the big book, it's the medical estimate of this disease, tells us four times I have to put the food down before working the steps. And it also says the only hope is entire abstinence. I couldn't pick and choose. I had been waiting until I felt like putting down the food, with quotation marks around food. I had to take actions. Feelings don't count. What I've learned is we're all on an elevator and it's going down. Only one direction. And we get to push the button to get off. Do I want it to go all the way down to the bottom, or can I see? Gosh, that bottom looks scary. Ooh, I don't think I want to go that way. I see where I'm heading. I can push the button and get off. And that really helped me to start to realize I could take action. I could take action. I've learned every action, or in some cases, inaction, is either leading me one step closer to the food or one step closer to my higher power. So what did I do? I wrote down on my book 130, right? I posted in GroupMe, I'm in relapse, I need a sponsor. And boom, somebody reached out right away, gave me her name and number. Whoa. So I called her. She was young. I'm older. She wasn't born in this country. She had kind of an accent. I think I talk great, She, I, I had had a spiritual awakening when I was 18. She didn't know if God existed. She was bulimic. I'm just regular compulsive overeater. But you know what? Here's the difference. She wasn't eating, and I couldn't stop. I didn't have a list of what my requirements were for a sponsor, because I was so desperate. I would do whatever she said. I was out of ideas. I had proven over and over again, Elaine's ideas did not work. We used the big book as a text. We started in the doctor's opinion. I read a paragraph, she told me what it meant. I read a paragraph, she told me what it meant. I had looked at the big book as a novel. Oh, look at this. Look at that story. Look at this story. I hadn't looked at it as a set of directions. She gave me podcasts to listen to. If she gave me a podcast, we worked at night, 7:30. If she gave me a podcast, I had it listened to with notes for our call the next day. I was willing to do whatever she said. She challenged me about my food. She said, "You said
Unknown caller.
this and this and this is a binge food, but this thing you just had with lunch is like the second ingredient in those things." And I said, "Well, I get the kind that doesn't have sugar." real teachable attitude, right? And she said, "It doesn't matter. Look, when you make that, it's a second ingredient." And so I said, "Okay, all right." And the next day when she called, I said, "You were right. I needed to let that go. I could already tell just making that decision." She had me do a grocery store shopping trip. Go to the grocery store, walk up and down every aisle, and add to your list anything you ever binged on or wanted more of or was a fake of something else you really wanted or was a cousin to something that you can't do, to make sure that I was really being honest about that. And it took us a month to go through the steps. We worked hard and it was immersive. And then I started sponsoring. That's what happened. In the beginning, it was like a diet. And I had to walk through the food thoughts. The thoughts of, oh, that's in the pantry. Oh, look at that. I say, that's a crazy food thought. Ding, 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 ding. And then I would say, help God. And then I would go make an outreach call. And as I worked through the steps, that thought went away. And then when I got to like 8 and 9, I didn't want it anymore. But the beginning was tough. And I did go through withdrawal. I felt like I had the flu for a couple of days. And the thing is, I'm the only one that can walk through that food thought. I can support my sponsees, but they got to walk through their own food thought. I never have said, wow, that was a great binge. Can't wait to do it again. I never said that. But that's what it was like for me. I have a daily investment in my recovery. I have a document. These are my actions that are my daily investment in my recovery. I can't make myself abstinent. I can accept the gift that my higher power gives me. I can keep the channel open so my higher power can override my broken brain. But there are actions I can take every day that are my investment in my recovery. You know, those are prayer and meditation in the morning, before anything else. Before I, you know, see who sent me anything on this phone. And I can't skip that prayer meditation. If I do, it's like I'm walking naked through the day and pretending I have clothes on, you know? So think about it. You're going into work thinking you really look good, but you're really naked. That's how I went through the day. Or if I tried to go through my day without connecting to my higher power, which is my source of strength. It's like I'm taking a road trip, but I don't take time to get the gas. Am I going to get there? No. Some other things that are important for me, my daily investment, are meetings. I need a meeting a day. I need to take God with me through the day in constant companionship. I like to think of us holding hands, going through the day, just step by step. Outreach calls, connecting with others, sharing. You know, my recovery with other people, sponsoring. I commit my food ahead of time, the night before. It keeps it quiet. It keeps it quiet. I take care of my needs to make sure I have the right food at the right time and the right recovery actions. It's like I gotta pack my own diaper bag. You know, when I was a mom, my kids were little, they had everything they needed in that diaper bag and a few more things, you know, extra sweater, thermometer, you know, just extra stuff. But I found myself taking care of everybody else and not taking care of myself. I was like, Elaine, recovery, you got to pack your own diaper bag, girlfriend. And so I do that. I work hard to do step 10s when necessary, three parts of step 11, the morning, the night, and the walking around through the day. And also the 12th step. I really love taking people through the steps. Here are some things that I've learned the hard way too. Secrets grow in the dark. It's like I just keep piling it up and that rug gets bigger and all of a sudden I got a mountain in the room. So I've got to be honest. I've got to get honest and pop those bubbles. In order to get better, I had to do what I didn't want to do. And if I want different, I have to do different. These are all things that I've heard in meetings. I want to share my favorite paragraph with you from the big book. It's on page 25. And just indulge me a minute while I go through it. There is a solution, and it's in italics, so that's like neon. There is a solution. There is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires, but for its successful consummation. But we saw it really works in others. So we're saying, there's a solution. You aren't always going to like it, but it really works. I just love that because there are some things that as you go through the steps, you aren't going to want to do, but it really works and they're required for a successful consummation. And, we just get to pick up the kit of spiritual tools that our sponsors have laid out before us, that our fellows have laid out before us. And then we get rocketed into a fourth dimension. So that paragraph ends with a promise. We get rocketed into the fourth dimension. And as I shared in the beginning, when we first started, life is better than I ever imagined it could be without the food. I don't have a monopoly on it. The title page of the big book says, how many thousands have recovered? Have recovered. This book is almost 100 years old. It'll be 100 years old in 15 years, 14 years. And people are still getting well. It's not the book that hasn't worked, So set aside the past and embrace the truth today. What's the truth today? What do I need to face today? And I have another section I want to share with you. It's on page 28. We, in our turn, sought the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first to be a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. Okay, so we in our turn sought this desperation with all the desperation of a drowning man. Well, I have a unique perspective on this because I almost drowned when I was 7 years old. And we were in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm originally from Maryland, at the beach. And I had disobeyed my mother. She told me to sit on the blanket, and I went into the water anyway. And I mean, after all, I could swim, right? I could swim in the community pool. I could jump off the diving board. I went in. I got caught in a rip tide. And my mom was a good mom. She wasn't a read your book, not paying attention to your kids. She was a good mom. That riptide just took me. And I can remember I could barely keep my toes on the bottom of the sand. And every time I came up to get a breath, this wave came over my head. And then every time I came up, I can still picture it. This wave came over my head. And the lifeguard came out and got me. And I fought him. I mean, obviously, a 7-year-old, how much can a 7-year-old punch? But I said, I can swim. And he, pulled me in. And my perspective is I was fighting the man who was coming to save my life. This program is here to save our lives. Is it possible that maybe you're fighting the very thing that has come to save your life? Could that be possible? Sought the same desperation and the same escape with all the desperation of a drowning man. What if this is our only chance for recovery? How would I act differently? How would I embrace working with my sponsor? How would I embrace going to meetings? Would everybody get on my nerves? or would I hear the truth in what they say? If this is our only chance at recovery, what action can you take? What's your investment in your recovery? What truth do you need to face tonight? Thank you for letting me share. I'm giving you back 5 minutes and appreciate the opportunity. I look forward to hearing the shares in the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Elaine. That was awesome.